All right, folks, this is Tracy Sue, and you are listening to What Would Tracy Sue Do? We are finishing the book, Soul vs. Ego Smackdown, How to Say Yes to Your Soul and Tell Your Ego to Suck It. I, for one, am loving it because this is wisdom that I needed a reminder of, which is why I decided to read it to you. So, let's begin. We are at White Space, Soul's Magic Juice. White Space, Soul's Magic Juice. Busyness is the number one killer of soul purpose, and the ego is super genius in using it to keep you distracted and running on a hamster wheel toward nothing. White Space is the soul's magic juice. My clients always think I'm high when I tell them that planning nothing is the most productive thing they can do for themselves. I don't mean not to plan, refer to last chapter. I mean create time in your life where nothing is the thing you're intentionally doing. White space is an art term. White space is an art term referring to the empty spaces on a canvas. It's the space around the focal point objects that allows the eye to rest. Think of a painting of a barn. The blue sky above and around it is white space. Look at this book even. White space is used in the margins, paragraph beginnings, and at the top around the headers. I have intentionally used nothing as a creative element to add impact when I want to focus on something significant like one spark. See what I did there? Without the white space on a canvas, it would overwhelm the eye and the art would bring no pleasure. Without margins, spaces, or indentations, a book, it would look like this and you would have hard time reading and it would make your brain work too hard and you would hate this book because please don't do hate this book. Time is the same way. You can and should intentionally use nothing as a creative element to add impact to your life. Without it, nothing will bring you joy or happiness because you'll be rushing too fast to even experience it. There will be no hearing of a soul's voice for you to even follow. Do you know that CEOs are finding with today's new crop of workers? Oh, they are smart and productive and get very high standardized test scores, yet they lack a certain ability. Creativity. Since 1950, children have been taking the Torrance test for creative thinking. In 2010, a professor at the College of William and Mary collected scores from over the last 50 years to discover that since 1990, children's creativity scores have been declining. Children have become less emotionally expressive, less energetic, less talkative and verbally expressive, less humorous, less imaginative, less unconventional, less lively and passionate, less perceptive, less apt to connect seemingly irrelevant things, less synthesizing, and less likely to see things from a different angle, the study reported. Some experts want to blame television and video games, of course. Interestingly, though, this generation of children is also the first in which their enrichment activities became so structured and varied that they were as busy or busier than their parents. See the last chapter about my hating driving. It seems that they never developed daydreaming and the kind of problem-solving skills through free play that only can be developed one way. Boredom. It turns out that, Mom, I have nothing to do, is the secret magic to creativity and new ideas and out-of-the-box thinking. That's what busyness does to your brain. It sucks up all the creativity. It stamps out imagination when all your hours are accounted for in one productive activity or another. Of course, what do CEOs value most in their team? Creativity. Parentheses. Well, we all know that's a little bit of a lie if you've ever suggested something to a higher up and had it shot down, but that's what they're saying. End of parentheses. What do souls value most about being alive? Creativity. Creativity does not happen in busyness. You have to make space for it. White space. Which means you don't plan out every minute of every day to get everything done. You just stop doing everything and focus on what's most important. And sometimes what's most important is nothing. Plan nothing for Saturday. Leave Sunday like a wide open field of possibility. There's an entire ocean of time after 6 for 3 nights this week. Nothing. Glorious, creative, boring, nothing. It will feel positively indulgent, scandalous even. Doing nothing, your soul will speak. Intentional sleeping. A great deal of research has gone into our need and desire to sleep. As humans, we come into these human bodies and we're only conscious, awake, and doing stuff about half the time. Science likes to study what we do in our sleep. Are we resting or dreaming or what? Psychologists like Carl Jung have experimented with various levels of consciousness, such as lucid dreaming. Philosophers such as Aristotle have written about it. Shamans and Tibetan monks have used it in their religious rites. Dreams are mentioned in the Bible as prophetic, for instance, when Joseph interprets the Pharaoh's dreams that predict a coming famine. There are hundreds of books about dream psychology and symbols that your subconscious mind is conjuring up in your dream states. Psychics report dreams as one of the best ways they know what will happen into the future. It's a common phenomenon for people to re-experience the same dream over and over. Is déjà vu a memory of a dream or something else entirely? If you sit down and think about it, you probably have some interesting dream experiences to report yourself. Perhaps a dream that was so vivid you swear it was real. Or you had an experience where upon waking you knew the answer to a mystery or a problem that had been eluding you when you went to bed. Here's what I think. Your soul is doing its spiritual work while you're asleep. It's so powerful because you can't get in the way due to your ego's unconsciousness. I believe that your soul travels at night on a very important missions, whether these missions aid you in your human life work or your human life work aids your soul in its spiritual work is a paradox that I can't solve for you. Suffice it to say that your soul is doing work in other spiritual realms while you are sleeping. Now, I stumbled into this knowledge when I went to see my energy worker because I was having inexplicable feelings. I was crying and crying and crying, and I had no idea why. I had racked my brain for some devastating news or terrible development or some tragic thing buried in my psyche, and I came up with nothing. So I go see my energy worker, and she tells me what's going on. She gets me on the table, and she says, "It isn't yours." "What? Whose is it if it isn't mine?" I ask. "Your soul has been traveling in your sleep, and you weren't protecting yourself, and she picked up some dark energies and brought them back," she explained. "Energetic hitchhikers. Great." We cleared them out, and she helped me figure out what was happening in my sleep and how I could protect myself. At the time, this felt like something my soul was doing to me. Then one night, my soul woke me up because she was writing. Tap, 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 tap. She was just writing away. I wasn't getting any rest with all the busyness up in my psyche, so I woke up and said aloud, "If you're going to be working, do something useful and find some people who need my help. Get us some clients." Within a few days, I was on the phone with someone who had dreamed about me. We had never personally met. She became my client. Your soul is out there in the ether doing work. You can ask for her assistance. Give her assignments to help you. I will sometimes say to my soul when she gives me a project, "Listen, I will do what you ask, write this book or take on that project, but you need to provide me with the resources I need to do it comfortably." Which seems like an obvious request, but it's not. Give your soul assignments as you lay your head down to sleep. Then observe how different the world you say goodnight to is from the one you say good morning to. Respect the matter. Not very many people understand that they get to require some things in return for living their soul's purpose. Your soul came here for a reason. You'll be happier to do if you do what she came here to do. When you say yes to your soul, you'll feel contentment. When you say yes to your soul, you'll probably be helping others. All true. But here's what happened to me for a long time. I did my soul's bidding faithfully, but I was broke. Finally, I got fed up with it. I made a rule. Yes, I made a rule for my soul. Respect the matter. As we discussed, souls aren't made of matter. They are made of high vibrational light energy. They are unhindered by bodies. If she wanted to, she could put all the words in this book on the page in a blink, rather than have me type them out by hand. Souls can travel between worlds with a millisecond thought. They can flit from Earth to ether in a nanosecond that it takes you to blink. While they get pleasure from physical bodies, they sometimes jet off to other planes of existence when pain is involved. They don't fully comprehend the vulnerability of human existence because matter is just play to them. You are the matter that your soul made physical. In a very real sense, that's what you are, matter. If you, this package of matter that it's created, dies, if you die, souls just float off into the spirit realm to make themselves another body to matter in, and all is well and good. They have an awareness of their own eternality that allows them to feel liberated from human nature. Well, great for you, I shouted to my soul one day, but I'm matter. Matter is slow and dense, and it requires a hell of a lot of upkeep and maintenance. And this earth realm trades energy in the form of money, and I don't have any. I can't afford to be doing your bidding and neglecting the matters of food and gas and shelter and hot water. You chose to materialize as me, so you need to respect the matter and help me by providing me all the resources I need, including cash. During my Year of Yes Life experiment, I did a past life regression session, and during that session, I was allowed to play in a golden room where I could have anything I wanted. I was so happy flitting around that room with amazing breasts and glowing skin and all the beautiful things that I could have simply if I wanted them. When my spirit guides told me it was time to go back to Earth, I grabbed a stack of money, $1 million, and stuck it in the gold clutch I happened to be carrying. I got almost to the door and thought better of it. I went back and grabbed another million, stuck it in my clutch, and turned around and shouted, "Don't you act like you don't know this matters down there." Because, yeah, money matters down here. And so do a lot of other resources, including time and love. So I'm going to need more of all three if you don't want me to quit doing this work and go get a job at the Screaming Peach waxing vaginas all day and bringing home a steady paycheck. That's generally how my soul tomato goes. It's that ego? Is that ego? Maybe. But the soul really does need reminding that sometimes it's not the only one that matters. If your soul can materialize itself into a human body, it can also matter up some money energy to sustain itself in a human body and make the ego feel safe so you're not in a panic, freaked out crisis all the time. That's fair. Free will. So the ego keeps you alive with its primordial survival brain, and the soul made you matter and has this big, higher spiritual agenda. So what are you? I mentioned before that you are the self with the capital S. You're the combination of both soul and ego, but I think you're more than that. You're a third distinct energy which contains the personality and characteristics and preferences and idiosyncrasies, and maybe you contain the gifts and talents that you can develop to help the soul serve its purpose. You're born with gifts and talents, but it's only the persistent practice and discipline and commitment that develop those into anything marketable or worthwhile. I suppose that's the self's job. But you have a separate and distinct power that you hold over both the soul and the ego, free will. Notice that in the last section, I told you how I got really sick of sacrificing my earthly material things for my soul's purpose and finally refused to do it. That's free will. It took me a long time to understand that I could use it to stand up for myself, even against the spiritual side of myself. I work with many healers and I adore them. I feel like there's an awakening on the planet happening and there are many brilliant, powerful, and gifted healers who are here to help us. So it's such a privilege to be the one who helps them figure out how to turn their spiritual gifts into profitable businesses. A lot of that job is just trying to convince them not to be the slaughtered lamb for their soul's purpose. Listen to me. Don't be the slaughtered lamb. Get paid. Soulpreneur. Can you expect your soul's purpose to be your full-time bread on the table job? There's not one straight answer to that question. Don't you wish there were? I believe you can make a living using your soul's purpose. How that works and what it looks like will morph and change over time. For me, it has taken a variety of shapes and sizes, and for you, it will too. So don't make it so narrow that it suffocates you. Remember that living your soul's purpose is supposed to bring you happiness and pleasure. Your soul understands that money is a collective agreement of all souls on earth for generations now. So it's no surprise to it that a living must be earned. Which is why I believe that your soul's purpose can probably be made into a wage earner. I've always been determined to live by my pen. Of course, I've met writers who will declare that they won't sell their soul out to write marketing copy or be a poorly paid journalist or hawk their talents writing taglines for corporations. I guess you're opting for the day job then, because I have done all of those things with my pen. My career started in journalism and took a couple of crash and burn turns along the way as journalism tried to die and then be resurrected. I have written thousands of blogs for corporations and small businesses and even for content farms. I have written taglines and marketing copy for industries such as processed chicken and pipe fittings and tomato seeds and engineering firms. I've written LinkedIn profiles and thousands of social media posts. Was all of that my soul's purpose? All of that writing made me better at the writing craft itself. It's been part of the 10,000 hours of practice that they say you need to make you excellent at what you do. It pays my bills. My soul insisted that I pursue writing and I couldn't not do it. I would threaten to abandon it when it got hard to make a living, but just couldn't let writing go. This weird thing happened along the journey. My soul led me to here. I was studying for the LSAT when I got my first writing gig at a community newspaper making $7 an hour. I immediately abandoned my prospective law career. There wasn't even a second of hesitation on my part. After another community newspaper job, I realized that if I wanted to get ahead as a writer, I either had to keep moving from paper to paper to advance, or I had to go to the writing mecca of the universe, New York City. In New York City, I was offered two jobs right away. The first one sounded like my dream job. It was at a women's magazine, the kind they sell at the Impulse magazine shelf, and I would be writing things like fun advice column and various articles. Perfect. The second one sounded kind of lame. It was at a business travel trade journal. It would be writing about business, and sometimes there would be a free trip. The focus was on meetings and conventions industry. Seriously? The tiebreaker was time. The first job was in New Jersey, a 2-hour commute on trains between the job and my newly leased apartment in Brooklyn. I knew it wasn't sustainable. My young marriage would suffer from me never being home and I would be exhausted. I took the business writing job. Boy, how that has worked in my favor. Had I taken the women's magazine job, I would not be a spiritual business coach today. Talking to business owners, industry leaders, public administrators about taxes and funding and economic trends and marketing tactics became my day-to-day interests. It remained so even after that job ended and I became a freelancer. During 20 years of business reporting, I have interviewed hundreds of entrepreneurs and experts in their industries to find out what they were doing. That's how I can do what I do now. I use all of that gathered knowledge to help people start their own soul purpose companies. Now, when an energy healer comes to me wanting to create a business with her sole purpose, I can help her to put together a marketing platform and create a business strategy that's going to work for her. When a real estate professional comes to me, I can help her draw healthy boundaries around her time so that her business doesn't eat her life, even as it gets more profitable. When someone comes to me with visions of an apparel company that is demanding to be created that won't give her any peace, I know what steps to help her take to figure out how clothes get made from vision to matter. My soul knew where she was going, even though I didn't at the time. I believe that you can use your soul's purpose in any profession, but that your soul obviously prefers one or a few over the rest. People have different professions over their lifetime. You might be a teacher for 25 years and then take up a second career as a healer after retirement. Several of my clients are in their retirement professions, and they're as or more ambitious than my younger clients. Just remember, your soul knows where she's going. She knows the fastest, easiest way to get there, even if you don't. Law of Attraction. There are lots of law of attraction and spiritual get rich with positive thinking books out there, which will tell you to just visualize something and it will come to you. If you build it, they will come. Think it and believe it and it will happen. But it's not really true, is it? My client has a clear vision of the clothing line, but to make it manifest, there are some steps in between visualization and manifestation that do require a little bit of know-how. In fact, there are many steps. Your soul's purpose might have many steps that you don't know how to do. That's okay, because what the example of my career path shows you is that if you keep saying yes when you get that little ding inside yourself, following it will lead you to where your soul wants to go. I truly thought that taking the second job back then was settling for the second best job. Yet I find my work so fulfilling now that I wouldn't trade it for anything. Looking back, I can see that the path leading me to this current career started at that fork with one choice. My unique skill set combines the practical business information I gathered during 20 years of researching and reporting on various industries with the spiritual work I've done on myself, investigating the soul and how to manifest and attract things through spiritual law and law of attraction, which I started after 9/11. This combination gets results that are so unbelievable, you could call them miracles. Please note that I could never have set out at the beginning of my career after college with spiritual business coach as my destination. The job that I do now did not even exist when I started choosing majors. My soul literally invented it for me as I went. What I'm telling you is that the outcome is so incredibly, unbelievably awesome that you can't imagine it. So there's no way you're going to be able to visualize it into being. Money, the big excuse. But Tracy, I just don't have any money. Did you just call me on your iPhone to say that? Oh my God. We're the richest people on earth. In fact, the richest we're the richest people on earth. In fact, the richest civilization that has ever existed on the planet, and nobody has any money. It's a collective mental illness. It's absurdly untrue. Remember when I told you that after my divorce, I was flat broke, making $600 a month and feeding my kids out of the food bank, doing crappy writing work that wasn't paying the bills? Horrible, right? Poor single moms like me, what are we expected to do? We can't live our soul's purpose and create dream businesses out of our delusional fantasies, right? Yes, thank you, ex-husband, for using the word delusional to describe my dreams. Can't we? Let's look at that poor single mom again. Get a closer view at the whole picture and try to figure out how the hell she did make a dream business out of her delusional fantasy. There she is standing in line at the food bank with her young 6-year-old son who thinks of this place as the free food store. And he helps her fill their bags with some fresh veggies, stale bread, and barely expired dairy. She tries not to check her iPhone while standing in line so as not to inappropriately flash a symbol of wealth. She notices that most of those in line do have smartphones. She drives away in her paid-for 2005 deluxe minivan with leather seats and heated booty warmers to her home, which she now independently owns and has the lowest mortgage in town because they bought before the next boom. She and her children buy their designer clothes primarily from the thrift store, but people regularly ask her for style advice because it's not about how much you spend, it's about how you wear it. She pays her subcontractors to do some work as she seeks bigger projects for her company. She spends all her money on learning new business models and strategies that might work for her. She invests every penny extra in her businesses in faith that it will pay off and create a better life for her family, which is, if you recall, how every American dream story begins. She prioritizes her health because she knows that without it, she's in real trouble. So she spends money on massages, energy work, healthcare supplements, and a gym membership. She refuses to get a job because her soul whispers, if you do not throw yourself into this business, we will get stuck here, and we cannot get stuck here. She can see that if she takes a customer service job to pay the bills, she will be trapped in the low pay, always scraping by, never getting ahead lifestyle, and she won't have time to build her business. There's this voice telling her that if she just keeps following the voice, she'll be led to the light. The light of love, happiness, and belonging. The feeling of waking in the morning and knowing that there's a reason to bother trying. The feeling that she matters. She can feel the exciting creation energy as she matters her book and her business into existence. She has the joyful experience of creating the spark. So you don't have any money? Yeah, me either. Neither do the majority of people who currently live their soul's purpose. Ask any American on the street. We're broke, we don't have any money, and we don't have enough time. So what? The secret of living your soul's purpose is not about waiting for the moment when you have enough time or when your bank account has enough zeros for you to do it without stress. I mean zeros behind numbers, obviously. The secret of living your soul's purpose is insistence. You insist that the universe provide the way, then it must. Soulconomics, money. There's not a more highly charged issue than money. The world itself can induce magnificently passionate reactions in people. The Bible says, the love of money is the root of all evil. Boy, has this one been used to demonize both money and love, even as the church begs you for 10% of yours. Here's the thing about money. Most of it is imaginary. It isn't even in the form of matter. Of the 10.5 trillion American dollars circulating in the world, only 1.2 trillion is in cash and coins. The other trillions are just numbers in machines. What is money even? Money is energy. Every country and culture on the planet has agreed, for the sake of convenience, to exchange energy for goods and services rendered in the form of money. Dude, it's hard to sell your family chicken to China in exchange for cheaply made party dress. Money is convenient. Money is also a universal soul agreement. Think of the collective consciousness that has gone into the agreement that money is the primary means of energy exchange all over the planet for many generations. For thousands of years, all souls have come here understanding that money is our energy currency. So what would make such energy evil? Like love and God, the energy of money can be distorted and abused by people. I have a client who says things like, rich people are greedy and not generous. Really? Because poor people are virtuous and generous? Like, as a rule? More likely, stingy people are those who have a sense of fear and lack in their lives, and generous people have a sense of abundance and gratitude in their lives, and it has little to do with the amount of money in their bank account. Money can be used to create light. Money can be used to feed the dark. Money itself is simply energy to be used by humans. Spiritual people often turn their noses up at money, believing all sorts of nonsensical stereotypes about what kind of people have money, what motivates people to get it, what people have to sacrifice to get it, and what people do with it. People with money are not spiritual enough, are motivated by greed, have to work themselves to the bone and sell their souls to make it, spend it on ridiculously unworthy things, and are not grateful enough for it. Money hate is a bullshit ego move. What's the best thing that can set you free to live your soul's purpose? Money. Money allows you to finance the purpose. Businesses cost money to grow. Kids cost money to raise, feed, and house. Love affairs and marriages without money tend to end in conflict over money. Poor people are often more obsessed with money than rich people. They are all consumed with not having money, worrying over their bills, resentment that they can't meet their basic needs, and frustration every time they buy something or have an unexpected expense. Believe me, I'm familiar with this one. Our egos lie to us, telling us that it is somehow about our worthiness. The spiritual community lies about this as well. That we are incapable of earning money because of our circumstances. Our value to the world is less than rich people's. And let's face it, poor people are more holy than those who have an easy life full of riches. No. Money is reciprocal. Recyclable, if you will. Let's follow the sparks that money creates. You own a soul-driven company. Let's say it's that cycling apparel company. This product has harassed you and demanded that you create it. So you muster up everything you've got and you do it. During the process, you hire various people to help you. Apparel designers, a business coach, people to help you with your marketing and website. Each of these people are running their own soul purpose-driven businesses that you've just helped succeed and stay in business. Now, those people go out and spend the money on mortgages and groceries, which is given to the checkers and bank employees who can now use it to spend the money. So many sparks! You have to buy products to create and sell your clothes. This puts money in the pocket of clothing designers, manufacturers, sewing machine operators, packagers, the post office or UPS employee, and every person who comes into contact with any of the materials like thread and packing boxes. So many sparks. Now you have to sell the product to your customers, which blesses them incredibly as they feel like superheroes pulling on their bike shorts right before a big race. Every person who sees your products, tries them on, or buys them are blessed by the creation. Sparks, sparks, sparks. There's a spark now between all of your employees, subcontractors, manufacturers, and customers, and these sparks aren't created with a kind word of support. They are sparks created with energy that has real, tangible value in the world. Energy they can pay their mortgages and buy gas with. It's energy that makes their lives better. In other words, because you lived your soul purpose and started this company you thought you couldn't afford, you've enabled countless others to live their own soul's purpose and take care of their families. You've reduced their stress and made them feel valued and successful. That, my friends, is not the root of evil. That is love and light. Money is a spark. The gap. Mind the gap. That's a phrase in Britain to remind people to take care as they move from one train car to the next. Taking a tumble in the gap would prove deadly. This seems to be the universe's mattering pattern. Listen to your soul, say yes, create an intention, ask for the universe's assistance, enter the gap. Watch everything you already have that you've decided to improve vanish. Get scared out of your mind. Be taunted by the ego for making such a huge mistake. keep moving toward what you want, start receiving what you've asked for, clear the gap, feel soul blessed. Like you, I have been so very pissed and afraid during this sequence of mattering. Why, oh why, does the universe require you to give up what you have before you can get what you want? I, like you, would much prefer to build the business before I get laid off from my current job. I, like you, would prefer to have my wealth seamlessly increase as my business instantly manifests six figures. I, like you, would much prefer to keep my current friends even as new ones come into the picture. However, most often I find that the universe will help you release that which is filling up your life to make room for what you've asked for. Refer back to the importance of white space. Remember, when you are in the gap, that the ego will take on new fierceness, attempting to force you to turn back, making you want to hide in the cave for safety. However, if you stay the course, you'll soon make it to the next car or the next level, and you'll be clear of the gap and so grateful that you had the faith and guts to keep moving forward. Do not turn back. Do not turn back. Work the ego. Dissolving the ego is a huge, big waste of time and energy. You're not a monk. You have shit to do and you can't sit around all day meditating. Instead, you need to treat the ego like a dog and put it to work. Without an assignment, a job that is big enough to keep it interested and entertained, it will wreck your life. I had one client who wanted to downsize her life by moving into a house by the lake and not doing any more particular soul draining kind of business. She could plenty afford this scenario. Yet egos don't care what you can and can't afford. They have a party line, and that is, you can't afford this! Poor people have a hard time believing that egos are assholes to well-off people about money, but they can be if they are left unchecked. Anyway, her ego was all concerned about the numbers, so we gave it a job to keep it busy. First, a little stroking. Oh, ego, you're so freaking amazing with numbers and budgets. I don't think we can possibly ever move to the lake, but if anyone can figure out how we can afford it, it's you. Would you please do me a favor and call some real estate agents and make a PowerPoint presentation about how we can make this happen? Guess what? Her ego got on board and felt important and found the way to make it happen. They built the house, saved money, and she made even more money doing the type of work her soul loves than she was doing before. Put your ego to work. Stroke it and give it an assignment. If it has concerns, tell it to solve them. We don't have enough time? Ego, please work out the calendar. We don't have enough money? Ego, please find a way to make some. Visualization. My spiritual manifestation journey began with the law of attraction, and I have been consumed with the study and experimentation of it for the last 13 years or so. This spiritual reality saved my life after my darkest days post 9/11. However, I didn't just follow it blindly. I've kept records and wrote things down and done experiments with my friends and later with my masterminds and my clients. If it's a law or a science, it should be replicable every time. So they say. My results have been mixed, but I've witnessed so many miracles that I wholeheartedly believe that it works, and I teach the methods to my clients, masterminders, and anyone else who asks me for advice. Here's a good example of what I mean by mixed results. I do a dream board every year. In fact, my whole family does, and we have a big annual dream board party the first week of January. We've gotten enough results that we don't put something on the board unless we're very serious about getting it. Some of the time, we get exactly what we asked for. Other times, we get something that's a bit off. For instance, I put my Dodge Grand Caravan on my dream board and went to the car place and told them that I wanted a red, clean, low miles, leather, all the bells and whistles, for $8,000. Oh, he laughed and he laughed. 3 weeks later, he called and said, I would never believe it, but an older couple had just come in and said they bought this van thinking they would be driving their grandkids around, but they haven't used it much, and it has almost no miles and all the bells and whistles, and they're willing to trade it in for $7,500. My life is full of these stories. I'm still driving that van and I love it. We just hit 250,000 miles and let's go for another 250 more. My pretty red van. My life is full of these stories. I'm a believer. I study other people's thoughts on it as well. Visualization is one way that most manifestation coaches will tout. Just visualize what you want so intensely that it's like you already have it. Visualize it over and over and over for 20 minutes a day. Jump around in your living room, believing that you have it. Speak as if it is already so, and then eventually it will be yours. Good golly, you can't imagine how much of my life I've spent trying to visualize stuff that I want. Sometimes I've gotten what I visualized so exactly it was eerie. Sometimes I do not get what I want no matter how hard I try. Sometimes I get what I want and then it feels nothing like I imagined it. I started noticing that there were different qualities to the visualizations. If it is difficult to visualize, my results were less likely to be positive. I noticed that sometimes visualizations happen without conscious effort. They are things we catch ourselves daydreaming about. Other times, I just can't keep the vision in my head. Still others, I would imagine the way something would feel and it would be amazing. And then when I got it, it would be flat. After my years of examination, I began my year of yes experiment where I put the visualization practices away and started to follow my soul rather than try to attract something to me or to make something happen. Here's what I learned. The visualizations that come so effortlessly that I catch myself daydreaming them are my soul's longings. The visualizations that I can't hold on to in my mind are not mine. They are some other thing that consciousness that I might be trying to want, but they do not belong to me. Let me say that again. The visualizations that I can't hold on to in my mind are not mine. They are some other thing in consciousness that I might be trying to want, but they do not belong to me. They may be things that people around me want me to want. The visualizations that I manifest, but then feel flat when I get them, are my ego's desires, or they're at least not my soul's. The things that haven't yet manifested are still coming. There are things happening right now in the universe that we can't see yet. Soulful serendipity. In addition to annual dream boards, my spiritual manifestation practice includes choosing a word for the year. Yes was not my first word, but it was the one I wrote a memoir about. My word in 2015 was serendipity because the year prior, I had looked at my results and realized that the things I had most enjoyed that year were the things I could never have thought to ask for. In other words, my best gifts from the universe that year were not the things I painstakingly cut out and pasted on my dream board or the man that I conjured up with my list of qualities that I think would make up the perfect mate or the things I thought I had spent my energy visualizing. They were the people that I met who I never knew would make me happy and the breadcrumbs that the universe left for me so that I would follow my soul to an unexpected venture. One example of serendipity I'm referring to happened at Hay House Conference. I knew that I was publishing the Year of Yes that year, but I hadn't decided how I wanted to do it, whether self-publishing or traditional publishing. I honestly wasn't thinking much about it because it was only March. Waiting for a speaker to take the stage, I looked down at my hand and I laughed because I had written Tracy Books on my hand, my own hand. I had no conscious recollection of doing it, but there it was. I laughed at my own silliness. Later in the conference, I looked down after a meditation and saw that I had written in my journal, I'm going to start a publishing company. How cute. Now, I had other ambitions for that year and never had fantasies or visualizations starting a publishing company. So I told a friend or two about these funny things and moved on with my business. I was making all sorts of publishing decisions that year. I had published with traditional publishers as well as self-published a book in the past. Now I was investigating the publishing industry from a business perspective about how I wanted to put my sole purpose book, The Year of Yes, into the world. I was realizing that traditional publishing is a terrible business plan for most authors. Not only are you footing the bill for your own marketing and publicity, but they own your copyright, take your creative liberty, it takes them years to get a book on the shelves, and you never see a profit most of the time. It was the time that was the real clincher for me due to my very real vaginal pushing. You remember from the beginning of the book? There was no way this could continue for the years it would take for me to find an agent, then a publisher, and finally to get this book on the shelves. Self-publishing was also not the best option because while I was fine figuring out all the administrative stuff that has to be done, it really bothered me that I had to give up third-party credibility and my ever-cherished childhood dream. I set up a publishing company, Sue Inc., hired expensive photographers, designers, and editors to make the best possible book, and I went to buy an ISBN. As I wrote Sue Inc. into the blank for publishing company on the ISBN site, it occurred to me that I had started a publishing company just as my soul told me I would back in March. Cute story, huh? That's not the end of the story. By January, a poet I know, Winston Hampton, asked me if I would publish his book of mystical love poetry. Rumi would have laughed. So I put together a publishing package that offered everything I had previously wanted in a publisher to keep my copyright and creative liberty, provide professional editing and design, and offer me third-party credibility. A few months later, Jana Phillips, a woman I've never even met, asked me to publish her memoir out of the blue, a psychic's memoir. She heard of me through a friend. Seriously, go read that book. It is a fascinating look at death and how we pass into the other realm. As I was working on both of these books, there were moments when I was deep in flow. My soul was playing with the light of these two healers' words, and I felt as though I was doing God's holy work. I took Jana's simple, disorganized, but beautiful third-person fiction book into an extremely powerful first-person memoir that I am very proud to put my publishing imprint on. This. God. I had moments where I could feel my soul dancing for joy as I edited and reorganized and worked my work, my word magic, on these two soul-purpose books. That, my friends, is the definition of soulful serendipity. So yes, you can visualize things into existence. You should probably absolutely ask for what you want. You should definitely insist on what you need. Still, the super juicy magic is so awesome that you haven't yet thought to imagine it. Not till you're dead. The outcome isn't the outcome until you're dead. Sweet, sweet soul brothers and sisters, can I make a very embarrassing confession? I have lain on my floor in utter despair over my failure and defeat. I have cried. I have shouted, shaking my fist at the universe. I have written scathing letters to God. I have gone to healers begging them to make my soul stop wanting hard stuff. I have stomped my feet and gone on soul strikes. I have hibernated in my house, seeing no one, attempting to hide the shame of my failure. I have turned my back on writing, but only once or twice. I have grieved deep and terrible grief and sighed deep and terrible sighs over my failure to live out whatever outcome I imagined that day. The interesting thing is that you can faithfully push forward and achieve a huge milestone that your soul has called you to do, and even then your ego will ruin it for you, that fucker. The outcome isn't good enough. You have failed, the ego will taunt. In reality, what has happened is that you have been brave and courageous and faithful and strong and persistent and brilliant, and you have produced a million megawatts of light for the planet through all of these amazing sparks you've created with this beautiful, magnificent project. But no one cares. No big check came. One person criticized me. Oprah still hasn't called yet. Someone else did it better. If you get hung up on the outcome, this will be the internal dialogue. Soul, I did it. It's so amazing. Look at the big light I just sparked. Ego, you suck. Nothing you do matters. The real jerky thing about this is that whatever the ego is talking about is not the outcome. The outcome isn't the outcome until you're dead. Even then, the outcome isn't the outcome. People still stand in front of the Mona Lisa today, completely mystified by the everlasting light and mystery she contains. Even now, no one knows who she is. One spark. Between painter and subject. One spark between Leonardo da Vinci and viewer. One spark between Mona Lisa and viewer. Millions and millions of viewers long after both painter and subject are dead. So don't let your ego play that last dirty trick on you. He knows you've made a huge leap forward and that you're not likely going back to your cave now. But that scares him so bad that he'll redouble his efforts and shame you and torture you with imaginary outcomes that haven't even happened yet. Things are happening. I was past a deadline for one of my clients on a big design project. I had bought a theme that had more bells and whistles, but there was a learning curve that the designer and I were taking on. A lot of stuff was getting done on the project and we were nearing the finish, but I didn't have anything to show him yet. Things are happening that you cannot see, I wrote him. Then I realized that when I'm living my soul's purpose, things are happening that I cannot see all the time, and that I shouldn't be so frustrated about what is or isn't manifesting right that second, because it is manifesting. I just can't see every single nut and bolt move or every twist of the universal screwdriver. Please remind me that things are happening that I cannot see the next time I get frustrated with the universe, I wrote him. Picture the entire universe and everything you've asked for. Things are always happening that you can't see. Hanging on to that is what faith is. Feelings earned. Client, I want to feel confident. I have such self-doubt and all these worthless worthiness issues. I feel like other people have it so together, and I know that they can do what they want to do. I'm sick of feeling stressed out about money, and I'm sick of my ego telling me that this is my life and will always be my life. I want to have faith. Me. You can't have what you want right now. I'm sorry to break it to you, but there is no person out there who knows they can do everything that they want to do. There is no person who feels unfailingly worthy and never has self-doubt. There are only people who do it anyway. If you did not have faith, you would not be going forward with your plan or sitting here with me. You've got the wrong idea about what faith feels or looks like. In the Bible, everyone is talking about faith, but most of them are stranded in the desert on their knees yelling, God save me. No, dear. The feelings you want to feel right now aren't yours yet. You get the confidence after you've done what you're trying to do, not before. Some feelings you gotta earn. Red carpets. When you begin living this way, the universe rolls out the red carpet for you, but it's a flying carpet and you have to leap off the cliff to land on it, if you're lucky. It takes a great deal of faith to say yes to that still, small voice that you can't name, see, or touch. Especially because it is asking you to do things that your mother or your spouse might tell you are crazy. Even more so when it begins to threaten your ego's safety by messing with your time, money, and confidence. Once you take the leap and land on the carpet, there is enormous relief. Until it starts moving and you're not really quite sure where it's going to end up. Along the way, in the gap, you'll end up in situations that you'll think you never signed up for, and it's okay to curse when that happens. I don't know where your soul is going to take you, but I do know that the universe begins working on your own behalf in ways that will appear miraculous and magical because the universe is interested in your soul's expansion. Your soul is interested in your happiness, so the magic carpet ride should be a lot of fun if you can keep the ego from freaking out. Sometimes you will feel like you're winning. Sometimes you'll feel like you're failing. Win. Fail. Win. Fail. But if you are trying at all, taking any step forward, you are winning. There are things happening in the universe that you cannot yet see. I promise. I do believe that you can have faith in this soul promise. Your soul knows where it's going. It knows the fastest and easiest way to get there, and it will never, ever steer you wrong. Say yes. The end. Thank you so much for listening to me read that book. I personally needed it. I needed to read it again. There's so much wisdom in here that I had forgotten or put to the back of my mind. I'm in the gap right now, and I had forgotten about that concept. I could feel that I was in it, but it's nice to be reminded that there is wisdom deeper than me, even as I used my pen to channel it, who can help me calm the fuck down. So, I really enjoyed this. I hope you really enjoyed it. You can get a print copy on Amazon.com. I will have this recording somewhere, I'm sure, whether on my website or on Audible. I guess I'll let you know later. It is a print book and also an ebook on your Kindle. And this was a lot of fun. I really actually enjoyed this, and I'm happy that I did it, and I'm happy that I read it, and I hope that it blessed you just as it has blessed me. Oh, and those meditations and that time class that were mentioned in the book can also be found on TracySue.com. That's the Soul Whisper Meditation and Time Joygasm. If you go to my website, there are places for you to sign up for that. And the cost is minimal. I think the Soul Whisper is actually free.